Yes, I would also like to share my thanks. The conference is the outcome of tremendous work done by the team and by all those who participated already and will participate in this event. And we have thanked everyone and to be thanked for making this exhibition and this project happening many times earlier, so I spare you that. I will just continue in a footnote-like manner on what Anselm just elaborated. As you can already glean from what Anselm just said, Carl Einstein thought rather highly of prehistory and prehistoric art. Like many of his contemporaries, he was in awe contemplating the vastness of time that precedes documented archived history. He emphasized the prehistoric and thus, thank God, he would have said, non or rather pre-intellectual character of every important art in the past and in the present. Painting, he writes in his notes from the 1930s, painting for us is often a way of communicating among illiterate people. How crude and poor the great Picasso speaks of visions. By necessity, he uses the means of a nebulous stone age. Prehistoric art, moreover, to Einstein appeared to be closer to early classical art than many might think. The transition, he contends in the notes from the Handbuch der Kunstkonvolut, the transition to the Frühantike, the early classical period, is pretty narrow and intimate. Everywhere, the Neolithic reaches further than the historical art. Thus, the ages coalesce. End of quote. A phenomenon, the coalescing of ages, that Einstein intended to elaborate visually in the volume he planned to devote to maps and diagrams. However, such universality of the prehistoric and the Neolithic has its limit in the present, the standpoint from which every history is being written. All history is dominated by actuality. Alle Geschichte ist von der Aktualität dominiert. And this very domination by the present results in a suppression and a forgetting. The ties to the past, Einstein puts it, mutate under the pressure of the present. Die Bindung an die Vergangenheit mutieren unter dem Druck der Gegenwart. Oops, sorry. Einstein's understanding of art history, historicity and temporality in the 1930s is marked by a variety of theoretical and methodological peculiarities. I want to single out only two here. For one, he envisions history as an armature of different velocities, as a racetrack on which cultures, life forms, and styles perform in varying speeds of progression and regression. And Einstein uses a language which by itself displays a particular sense of speed and compression. This section from the folder 244 in the Carl Einstein archive, which we show in all its cut-and-paste splendor in the exhibition, is headed by the telling line, art historical tempo and social structure. And Einstein proceeds by speaking of mythic, dogmatic inhibition of the past Neolithic state as an immobile, theogonic association determined eternally by gods and god kings. A situation that ends with the modern historical tempo of the Greek, with their mobile city-states, the dissipation of the theogonic society, a modern unrest, all leading to a rapid development towards anthropocentric realism, the humanist measure, the primacy of knowledge. With the first historians who seek to separate fact from tale, putting men and his actions center stage. Realism and the acceleration of historic speed, then the regression of Christianity, etc. You will get a sense of how Einstein conceives of history and how art is being portrayed as a force that dialectically participates in this spectacle of accelerations and decelerations. It may not come as much of a surprise that Einstein's conception of the historicity of art and the material works of art is modeled after the stratigraphic logic operating in archaeology and geology, respectively. Each artwork is a historical conglomerate, and the question to be asked in each case should be which temporal stratum dominates or which temporal strata intersect in a work of art. Einstein continues, the duration of works of art is determined by the succession of contemporary readings, which decide whether or not they, the works of art, can become contemporary, aktuell, participate in a given present again, or whether the old work of art degenerates into a mere aesthetical phenomenon in the course of which it transmutes into a sign of death. Towards the end of this passage, the temporal stratigraphic approach gives way to a more general observation about the history of art as Einstein envisages it, being a history within the history of social conditions, which is not simply a history of objects, but a historiography of art as a realist art history. To finish with these scattered remarks on Einstein's theory of history and prehistory, I would like to point towards his role as one among a number of thinkers in the interwar years. Georges Bataille could be mentioned here, but also others, who'd easily classify as theorists and critics of the Anthropocene avant la lettre. This manuscript, which we also have in the show, bespeaks an awareness of the planetary dimension of humankind and of the deep time of art history. All this is the history of things made by human beings, of man about ourselves. We know only little. We deduce our knowledge of him through his production, which are now his witnesses. That is, we construct history in the course of time on the basis of ossified things, which we put with more or less certainty in a chronological order. When we write the history of the Earth, we presuppose that the influence that men have on the planet which they inhabit is so small that we do not take it into account. The same when we speak of physics, we disregard the influence of the experimenter. Einstein didn't pursue this geopoetic vista much further in the writings we know of, but his realist conception of historiography implies a consideration of the geological repercussions of human history as a continuation and arguably transcendence of the accounts of historical materialism. In any case, he was acutely aware of and concerned by the ongoing loss of historical data and knowledge. His emphasis on the present of any present, which is always informing and inevitably productively or reductively distorting historical accounts, should not be taken as an affirmation of these very presents and the possible reduction of history to them. I suspect that Einstein rather represents in his work the very sensibility to deep time in the moderns, as Frederick Jameson once put it in his critical rejection of the end of history and end of temporality mantra of the 1990s and early 2000s. At any rate, Einstein's historical hermeneutics, his presentism, which can also be considered a Nietzschean perspectivism, needs qualification. A point of departure of such an assessment certainly is the experience of the present, circa 1930, the precariousness of countless lives lived in unlivability, and the search for resources and refuges in art and science and history in the Neolithic and the non-European, that would enable the kind of alterations necessary to arrive at the agentic wholeness, the Aktganzheit, that Einstein aspired temporarily in Cubism and Surrealism, further into the 1930s in the anarcho-syndicalist collectivity of the Dorothy Kallum. Such agentic wholeness could also be sought before and particularly after Auschwitz, after World War II and Hiroshima, in an alleged eternal present, to quote Siegfried Gideon's two-volume prehistory of cave art and ancient architecture from the early 1960s. Gideon, obviously drawing on the writings on the relations between contemporary and prehistoric art by his wife, the art historian and Joyce scholar Carola Gideon-Welkel, speaks in his 1957 Bollington lectures about a new demand for continuity between the present and the prehistoric past that is not bound within the confines of a few decades or centuries. A new attitude has become apparent in literature, painting, and music. If one opens Finnegan's Wake, listens to a quartet by Béla Bartók, or looks at a picture by Joan Miró, each of them tells us that present, past, and future are not chopped off from one another, but merge into one uninterrupted fabric. A real inner affinity suddenly appeared between the longings of the man of today and the longings of the primeval man, crystallized in signs and symbols on the cavern walls. In the same year of... In the same year of Gideon's lecture, in 1957, Juan Miró, who he mentions as paradigmatic of the eternal present conceit, visited the caves of Altamira. A few years earlier, Georges Bataille had spent some time in Lascaux in the company of his publisher and the photographer in preparation of his 1955 book On the Birth of Art, to be detected in prehistoric painting. In 1967, André Malraux, who as Secretary of Culture had decided in 1963 to close Lascaux, visited the cave for the first time himself. Photographs like these, showing Georges Bataille, Albert Skira, Hans Hinz, Claudio Emmer, Diane Bataille, and others who participated in the production of the book on Lascaux, vividly demonstrate to what extent the historiography of prehistory is to be constructed technologically and discursively and to be transported, translated, transformed via media such as photography and print, which is a continuous work on canonizing certain versions of history, yet also renders them, due to their constructed nature, eminently contestable. Not only in regard to figures such as Einstein and Bataille, the latter attending the prehistoric cave painting in Lascaux in the knowledge of Auschwitz and Hiroshima, entering geologic time and the questions of origins and endings, we very much hope and expect that the talks we are going to hear and discuss today and tomorrow will help to map the complex interlaced scenery of historiographical discourses of the interwar years, the thinking of temporality, the vertical deepening and horizontal expansion of times in all their ongoing allochronicity and denied coevalness, in all their difficulty and relatedness to the crisis past and imminent. Thank you. I would just keep standing here, since we have a little change in the moderation schedule. I will moderate the first session with Susanne Leeb and Sylvie Chakalakal. I just quickly want to introduce our first speaker, Susanne Leeb. She's a professor for contemporary art with a concentration of transcultural art history at the Leuphana University Lüneburg, where she's also co-directing the Kunstraum, the university's art space, and heading the Leuphana Arts Program. She worked as an editor for Text zur Kunst and since then remained an active member of the journal's board of advisors. She co-founded the important imprint Polypen with the independent publisher B-Books and edits the section on transcultural art history in the online review journal Kunstform. Her dissertation on world art and the anthropological configuration of modernism, Die Kunst der Anderen, published in 2015, has proved to be a major resource and inspiration for the exhibition, as was Susanne's voice in the meetings of the working group that helped to conceptually shape Neolithic Childhood, the exhibition. Today, Susanne will speak about Weimar Republic cultural criticism and its models of history and historiography, focusing on the case of Wilhelm Hausenstein, if I understand correctly, as one of many counterparts to Karl Einstein, and the function that the turn to non-European art in the 1920s had for projective utopian notions of communities lost and to be regained. The floor is all yours.